outside. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a tie, can't just see. Hoping up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Tuesday, November the 14th, 2023, and you are listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. I'm a few days late, as you may or may not be able to tell listening to my voice. I'm a little under the weather, and I just wasn't feeling up to it either Sunday or Monday. But nevertheless, here we are. Better late than never. And on that note, I'm going to go ahead and apologize ahead of time for any unpleasant sound effects, such as what you just heard, me sniffing or clearing my throat. It's just a little thing that I happen to have picked up from one of my beloved children. Anyway, folks, as I said, welcome to the program. Hope you're all doing well. Those of you of goodwill, of course. We wish those of goodwill goodwill ourselves, those who have dedicated themselves to our destruction. Well, of course, we don't wish them well. This world and everyone in it, especially the people that we love, we're worth something. Okay, we're not cattle, we're not beasts of the field, we're not collateral damage, we're not somebody else's property, we're not slaves. Okay, we are children of our Creator, and all of us are worth a lot. And because of that, those who have dedicated themselves institutionally and constitutionally to our destruction, we don't wish them well, folks. That's basically handing your would-be killer the gun that he's going to use to end your life. And so we don't wish that. We're not going to wish them well. So anyway, having said that, we have a lot to discuss today, folks. If you tuned into this program to get cheered up, well, you should probably go somewhere else. You know, I always say that to the handful of friends that I still maintain when we talk about political things, and unfortunately they find themselves on the receiving end of one of my rants, and at the end of it, I always say to them, I hope you didn't call me to get cheered up. Likewise, folks, if you tuned in to today's program for some glimmer of hope or to get cheered up, well, you probably aren't going to find it here today. If you hear, in the event that you can hear in the background, folks, the noise of that, it's a heater I have out here in my man cave that I need to use to keep things warm. I'll tell you what, just hold on just a second here. You can probably hear it. It's probably very annoying, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it off. So please just hang tight for about 5 seconds. Okay, I apologize for that, folks. That was very unprofessional of me. Nevertheless, we've got a lot to discuss today, and it's not going to be necessarily good news, folks. Although, I think every day that we discover more and more of the truth is a good day. Okay, I mean, even when the truth is ugly, brutally ugly at times, it's a good thing. And, you know, it's got to be done. It's like I often tell people when I'm in the midst of one of these conversations, and I know I'm dealing with somebody who just really doesn't want to go there, as the saying goes. And I say, okay, that's fine. I said, no problem. You can either figure it out now or you're going to figure it out later. Okay? But make no mistake about the fact that pretty much, you know, what we have just discussed here, you're going to be forced to acknowledge this. Maybe not 100%, but I would say high 90s. So, folks, that's basically what we're going to be doing here today. Now, I'm going to be starting off the program. It seems that the listeners to this program, all five of them, they like my use of these sound bites, that they're very, very illustrative, very demonstrative, and that they basically, sorry, folks, a little tongue-tied, they basically make the case. You know, when you're hearing it come right from the horse's mouth, so to speak, it does a lot more in painting this picture than what I could do, you know, in the course of an hour's time of talking. And so we are going to be using some important sound bites on today's program in setting the stage. And so obviously, folks, a lot has happened in the 8 or 9 days since we've been together. The death toll in Gaza now has surpassed 11,000, maybe actually closer to 12,000 now as we speak. And while there is a great deal of outrage around the world for this, including in Europe, there isn't much of that here in the United States. Yes, we have the regular protesters who are out, you know, doing their thing. And you know what? That's great, folks. I'm glad to see that there are people who are out there protesting this. But unfortunately, and this is one of the things that one of the ideas that we have tried to get across on this program for many years, and especially beginning with the whole Sandy Hook hoax nonsense, which is that when you destroy your credibility, then, you know, by taking on some ridiculous position or some ridiculous cause that can't be supported with facts or truths, then on those occasions when you happen to get it right, nobody's going to believe you. You know, this is just an adaptation, I guess, of the moral of the story involving the boy who cried wolf. You know, he would cry wolf, scream wolf, because he liked to see the reaction that this created in the townspeople, where they would start running for their lives in fear. And there was never a wolf there. He just liked the reaction that it caused. And so then there was the time that there was a wolf, there was a real wolf, and nobody would believe him. And for the most part, folks, and I know not all of the people protesting here in the United States will fit into this particular category that I'm about to describe here. They're not Sandy Hook hoaxers, okay? But they were out in force during the whole George Floyd phenomenon, the Black Lives Matter phenomenon. Probably Antifa is, you know, they're probably out there protesting what's happening in Gaza and all the rest of that. And they have no credibility with the American people, especially with the right wing, okay? The right wing, who are tuning into the likes of Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck, and even say Dan Bongino, who are totally wrong on this issue, okay? Completely wrong. I had modest, I would say, higher expectations with Bongino, because I think he genuinely is an intelligent individual, whereas Hannity is just an absolutely incurably stupid, blithering nitwit. Glenn Beck as well. But they're all on the wrong side of this situation with regards to what is happening, the slaughter, the genocide that is happening in Gaza. And to a certain degree, you can understand why they have no choice. I'll say Bongino doesn't have any choice. I think Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck are so compromised, they have got a file somewhere on them a foot thick of embarrassing and possibly incriminating information that would be used against them if they ever decided to come clean and tell the American people the real facts of these various things that we're dealing with. But you see, because because the Black Lives Matter people and because the Antifa people and that whole gang made such a mess of everything 2 years ago, whatever it was, 3 years ago, nobody will believe anything they say, even when they're on the right page. And rest assured, folks, you can absolutely bet your last dime that this calculus was plugged into everything years ago when the Black Lives Matter thing was going on. All can rest assured, this war that is going on right now, this did not happen on October the 7th. It began 3,000 years ago, as we talk about on this program often. Specifically, 2,000 years ago, when the Romans went in and destroyed Jerusalem. Okay. What is going on right now is exactly what they have been constructing now for thousands of years. And these people, they're long-term planners, folks. They're very intelligent, very cunning, very crafty, very shrewd. Anybody who tells you otherwise, who says that the Jews are stupid, pay no mind to anything they say. They have no credibility, because the Jews are not stupid at all. So we can rest assured, absolutely rest assured, that all of the turmoil and tumult that took place a few years ago with the Black Lives Matter thing and all the rest of it, that it was plugged into this calculus of how they were going to make sure that they got the support, the political support that they needed here in the United States, where the lion's share of support for this entire doomed Jewish state project is the strongest, okay? It all factored into that. People like Bongino and Hannity and Glenn Beck, even if they were inclined to take a balanced approach to what is going on, to say, okay, yeah, the terrorist attacks on October the 7th were bad, but, you know, we need to stop this genocide that's taking place that has killed, oh, somewhere around 6,000 children. Well, they can't do that, folks. They can't even glance in that direction towards having a more balanced discussion of this, because if they do, they're going to be lumped in with the troublemakers who were burning down the country two or three years ago. And the same with Donald Trump, okay? He can't go there. He can't say, although you're going to hear in just a few moments here some sound bites from one of his rallies and then an interview that he gave, where he hints, you're going to hear, when you read between the lines, you're going to hear, well, I'll explain it to you when you get to that point, folks. But nevertheless, what I was saying prior to this is the case. This is why it is so important that you establish your credibility by staying away from crazy town, okay, and from crazy people. You know, I cannot emphasize this enough, and I can't tell you, folks, how frustrating it is to have this conversation sometimes with people 100 times where you tell them the same thing, you know, and it just doesn't sink in. And that's why I said, you know, I hope you're not tuning in today because you're depressed and you want to get cheered up, because I can assure you that ain't going to be the case, okay? Whatever gloomy expectations you are entertaining right now with the state of the world and where it's going to be tomorrow, they're probably not going to look much better after today's discussion, folks. Now, interestingly, and again, folks, you know, we have to remember here that what we do here on this program, and I do say that in the first person plural, meaning we. Okay, you know, because I do get insights and help from a few people out there who really do fill in a lot of the blanks for me, and who, you know, whose comments on things, news stories that they send, push me in a certain direction where I conclude. I say, okay, you know, that this missing thing here, this X, okay, and they help me to fill in that blank. And what we have heard in the last, since we were last together, especially the news coming out of Israel itself, is that they plan to go forward with this thing. Now, whether it actually happens or not, folks, and by this thing, what I'm talking about, of course, is World War III, is Armageddon, okay? Now, is it going to happen? Well, I don't know, folks. We don't know. None of us have the gift of prophecy. None of us have the gift of second sight. What I can tell you is that they intend to take it there. They intend to see World War III started. They intend to see Armageddon take place. And this should be of concern to all of us, because what we're dealing with here are members of a doomsday cult who believe with every fiber of their beings that the earth belongs to them, the earth is their oyster, and if they can't have it all, then nobody can has any of it. Now, Netanyahu, who I refer to as the wild animal in the expensive suit, he sat down and gave an interview with the nitwit Sean Hannity, where he says, and I quote, "America is next if Israel isn't allowed to finish off Hamas." Okay. And, you know, he does all of the usual business. You know, Israel's on the front lines defending Western civilization, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, peace, justice, and the American way. If Israel goes down, the whole world's going down. And, you know, again, folks, I find it very distressing how unaware people are of what creatures, dark creatures like Netanyahu, are really saying. Think back to the bomb cartoon that he wielded on the floor of the UN General Assembly in 2012, I believe it was. I was there in New York at that time. I remember seeing it on the evening news in my hotel room. That was the year that I had the great honor of meeting President Ahmadinejad of Iran. And, you know, everybody laughed about this bomb cartoon thing and what he was doing. You know, he had taken this bomb cartoon, this bomb, this picture of a bomb that one of his aides drew. And he took this red marker and he drew a line across the near top of the bomb. And the word, you know, the number's like 90% or something like that. Now, what he was saying, you know, was Iran's this close to developing a nuclear weapon. Okay, that's what he was outwardly saying. What he was actually saying to the leaders of the world is that we are going to blow the world up. We, meaning the state of Israel, we're going to blow the world up if you don't give us what we want. In this case, war against Iran. Okay. So, Netanyahu gives this interview with the nitwit, the incurably stupid nitwit, Sean Hannity, where he says that America and Europe are next if Israel is not permitted to finish the job of destroying Hamas. Now, folks, just to make it clear, you know, what is going on here, this is exactly what we were talking about a year ago, immediately after the elections that took place in Israel. When the elections took place and Netanyahu was reinstated as the capo de tutti capi of the Kosher Nostra crime syndicate, otherwise known as the Jewish state, and he brought in tow with him a bunch of religious nutcases, real Jews, folks, real Jews, who believe in all of this Nile to the Euphrates business. What we at this humble little informational endeavor said was, uh-oh, this is a problem. This is not a government that has been formed. This is a war party, okay? And they have just lit the fuse with this election. They have just lit the fuse on World War III. Well, much to our aggravation, distress, whatever we want to use to describe it, folks, to the best of our knowledge, and I certainly hope that I'm wrong about this when I say it, but nobody else picked up on this. Yes, there were people, particularly in the pro-Palestinian community, who were, you know, they were grumbling about various racist things that night creatures such as Smotrich and Ben-Gavir and others had said. But nobody was really, just like with the bomb cartoon, they were not giving this thing the seriousness that it deserved, okay? That what we were dealing with here were true Armageddonists, okay? So, this interview that Netanyahu has given with, as I said, the incurably stupid nitwit Sean Hannity, where he's saying, "You're next, America." Okay, because there is some pressure that is being put on Israel to stop the bombing, to a ceasefire. And Israel's saying, no, you know, we're not going to do this because we have to finish the job. Well, the job, the finishing of the job, folks, what that means is the Nakba Part 2. Okay, and we even have a member of Netanyahu's cabinet, Avi Dichter, who used to be head of Israel's Shin Bet, who came out and said exactly that. He said, "We are now rolling out the Gaza Nakba." Now, to those of you who don't know, who don't recognize that term, it's an Arabic term, Nakba, which means disaster or catastrophe. And this is the term that is used in describing what these feral, inbred, insane followers of Judaism did in 1948 when they pushed the Palestinians out of their lands. They refer to it as the Nakba. Okay. Well, now we have one of Netanyahu's most powerful cabinet members, Avi Dichter, saying exactly that. Yes, folks, they're not just pushing these Palestinians out of Gaza in order to take this space for themselves. They're pushing them out and doing so with unimaginable biblical violence in order to get World War III started. And this is what people don't understand. Even the people in the pro-Palestinian community who cover this stuff, they're not putting the two and two of all of this together. Okay, what happens when you push all of these desperate people, 2 million of them, in Gaza into Egypt? What happens? The Egyptians already have an extremely frail social system, a very, very frail economy. They can't absorb 2 million extra people. So what do you think is going to happen? Now remember, folks, the peace deal between Israel and Egypt that was signed in 1979, Israel didn't go along with this willingly. Okay, Menachem Begin, who was the prime minister at that time, he only went into this kicking and screaming because President Carter dragged him into it and threatened to start withholding foreign aid to Israel if Israel didn't play ball. So, and likewise with Jordan, okay, Israel did not go into this peace treaty in 1994 because she wanted to. She went into it because Bill Clinton put the squeeze on Israel to do it. Again, using the threat of withholding aid as the stick to get Israel to play along. And furthermore, folks, what we have to remember is that the Jews, the followers of Judaism, they are forbidden to engage in making any treaties with the people that they have been commanded to conquer. They're forbidden to do it. Okay, it's in that the quote that we run often on the website from Deuteronomy, where the Israelites, the Hebrews, the Judites, Judeans, whatever you want to call them, where they are commanded, you know, go in there and kill everything that is alive, leave nothing alive that breathes, make no treaties with them. That's very important that we have to understand, folks, as we move forward with today's discussion. Here it is, right here. When the Lord your God brings you into the land you are to possess and drives out the many nations larger and stronger than you And when the Lord your God has delivered them over to you and you have defeated them, then you must destroy them totally. Make no treaty with them and show them no mercy. Do not save alive anything that breathes. Okay? And just for the record, folks, just so that you know, for all of you out there who have really got a thing for the Talmud and who think that the Talmud is the source of all of this trouble, this comes out of the Torah, folks, the Old Testament, specifically the book of Deuteronomy. Okay. So, Israel has intended to do away with the peace treaty with Egypt for the last, well, how long has it been? 1979, so what, 1980, so that'd be 45, 46 years, is that right? Just off the top of my head. Okay, close to 50 years, Israel has been planning all along to do away with the peace treaty. How better a way to do this and to get a war started with Egypt than to push all of these desperate people fleeing from this unimaginable violence over into Egypt's borders and to cause all of the problems that something like that must inevitably cause. And, of course, it'll be blamed on Egypt. You know, Egypt, they're a bunch of Jew haters. Look what they did to us prior to the Passover. Moses saved us. Parting of the Red Sea, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, Israel will play the victim. And just like you have here in America now, where especially the right wing, they're saying, yeah, rah, 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 go Israel, go. Okay, it'll be the same thing when this thing widens to include Egypt. And then, after they have finished with pushing all of the Palestinians in Gaza into Egypt, there will be another eruption taking place in the West Bank. Something maybe not quite as dramatic. They may not be able to get this next one to fly that the Palestinians managed to kill. The number now has been downgraded to 1,400. What was the original number of 1,600 has now been downgraded to 1,400. But nevertheless, it'll be something really horrible, and then Israel will have her her justifiable reasons for going and doing in the West Bank what she's doing now in Gaza. And she's going to push all of those Palestinians in the West Bank into where, folks? Into Jordan. And the Jordanians are going to respond, and then we're going to see a war between Israel and Jordan. And then it will be Syria and it'll be Lebanon, and then that's it. And of course, as we have said for over a decade on this program, folks, there will be some horrible thing that's going to happen, probably here in America, because they've got the right wing already torqued up and angry over the lost election of 2020 and all of the other problems that we have in this country right now as a result of the completely incompetent Joe Biden. I don't refer to him as President Biden because I thoroughly believe with every fiber of my being that he is not the president. But nevertheless, when this next thing goes boom, everybody, they're already all torqued up and angry anyway, and then it will be, and then when it is blamed on Iran, then we will find ourselves going to war against Iran. Now, let's see, folks. I know we're getting a little long here. This was only supposed to be an introductory thing, and then I was going to play some sound bites, which I'm just going to go ahead and do. There's two of them right back to back. Let me find it here, folks. Yes, the first one is an interview that President Trump did with Trita Parsi, who I actually have had a few interactions with. He was going to come on the program one time years ago, folks, until I told him that I had been on Press TV a lot of times, and he said, oh, well, maybe I better not come on your program then. He was very kind about it, though, so I have to, you know, I understand. I totally understand when you have people who are operating at a much higher public profile than yours. Truly, they, you know, in order to stay there, they have to avoid people like me, tar babies like me. So I don't hold that against him. Anyway, he managed to get an interview with Trump, and he Trump said some very very interesting things, and we're going to listen to that right now as soon as I can pull
this
up.
It's very hard. There is no hatred.
Sorry, folks. Here we go.
Like the Palestinian hatred of Israel and Jewish people, and probably the other way around also. I don't know, you know, it's not as obvious, but probably that's it too. So sometimes you have to let things play out, and you have to see where it ends. The sad part is there would have never been an attack on Israel, and there would have never been a counterattack on
Gaza.
Yeah. I mean, Gaza, what's happening to Gaza? It's just unbelievable.
You've seen the images. You've heard the stories.
No, it's horrible. It's horrible on both sides. It would have never happened.
Yeah, folks, so the operative thing here, yeah, I know, Trump, he's got to dance this very difficult dance where he says, yeah, and probably the Jews hate the Palestinians as much, but it's hard to tell. He knows, folks. I mean, he knows now. He, the 4 years he was in office when he was dealing with these people, he learned a thing or two about why this whole thing is going on. Okay, so he knows, but he can't. This is what I mean. He can't wander off the reservation. His biggest base of support in this country, in terms of the election, are these nutcase right-wing Christian evangelical pro-Israel pro-Jewish people. They're the biggest voting bloc in America, and he has to dance a very, very delicate and difficult dance in order to not push them back into the arms of Netanyahu. But what he said here is very interesting and very important. He said it would never have taken place. The attack on Israel would never have taken place. And he didn't say if I had been elected, but that's basically what he was saying. He said it twice. Now, this is very important, folks, because what he's saying is that the narrative that we have been told, that Israel didn't know that the attack was coming, and that the intelligence services of the other countries who have spies in Gaza and throughout the Middle East, that they didn't know it was coming. Okay, we know that the Jews see and hear and smell everything that is going on in Gaza. They have an entire branch of their intelligence services known as the Mistavarim, I believe it's called. And these are Arabic-speaking Arabic Jews, okay, who can pass for Palestinians. And they go and they live amongst the Palestinians. And they're basically there as spies to hear and watch everything that's going on and then report it back upstairs. So the notion that Israel didn't know that this attack was coming is just foolish, folks. You might as well believe in the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy if you believe this. And Trump knows it. He knows that Israel knew. He knows that the United States intelligence community knew. He knew that the British intelligence services knew. Everybody knew, folks. So this notion that Israel didn't know and was taken off guard, he knows that it's a fraud, okay? And again, folks, as we said on the program, immediately after these attacks took place, they are taking place now. That this is, as I said before, this is Bibi's October surprise a year early. They need to make sure that this war is so hot and so big that it can't be put out even by the likes of Donald Trump. That's what it's all about. Now, the next soundbite that I have here also is very instructive about a lot of things. And it's Trump at a rally. I don't know where it was. I'm sorry. I should have done my homework on it ahead of time. It's Trump at a campaign rally where he's talking about what's going on. And as you're listening to this, folks, I want you to get yourself, you know, crawl into his brain for a moment and read between the lines what he is really saying here in his comments. Yes, he's got to talk tough. Yes, he has to speak in very simple tones that his audience is going to, that will resonate with his audience. You know, he can't talk way up here, folks. If you could see me right now, you'd see that I've got my hand held high above my head. He can't talk like that way up there with his base of support, because they simply don't operate on that level. For them, it's very simple. You know, make America great again, bring our jobs back, high-paying jobs, get the economy fixed. Let's deal with these situations that threaten our national security. But as far as the intricacies of how the world works, and especially how that particular corner of the world works, that has just thrown all world order into complete chaos ever since this creature came crawling out of the primordial hellish muck that it had been confined to for 2,000 years. He can't have that conversation with the average American. Okay? It's just not possible. So anyway, we're going to listen to this soundbite here and then we'll jump back into it. Hold on.
For four straight years under the Trump administration, I kept America safe. I kept Israel safe. And I kept the entire world safe. We were safe. We had nothing. This is shocking, what's going on. What's going on now is shocking. All over the planet, our enemies knew that if you try to kill our citizens, we will kill you. If you spill a drop of American blood, we will spill a gallon of your blood. That's what it was. And it wasn't a threat. That was just the way it was going to have to be. And we do it because we want to make sure that we're not starting wars. We didn't have to start wars. In the debate with Hillary, beautiful Hillary Clinton, she said, look at him. Look at the way he talks. He's going to get us into wars. He's going to start World War III. And I said, no, no. It's the way I talk that will keep you out of World War III. And when you think of it, how important elections are, you'd have millions of people alive right now if the election wasn't rigged. They'd be alive. Ukraine, Israel, the attack would have never been made. All these people would be alive. The cities would be thriving. To every American who is petrified that Joe Biden's catastrophic weakness will bring our country to ruin, which he has a great chance of doing, I make you this promise as your president, and nobody else can say it. I will restore peace through strength. And yes, I am the only one that will prevent World War III, because we are very close to World War III. And I know all the players. I know them all. I know them all, every one of them. We will prevent. And this won't be a First World War, a Second World War. This will be obliteration, because the level of power, of weaponry, of power, you've never seen anything like. You don't want to see it. You don't want to see it. When they talk about global warming, because in 250 years, our ocean's going to be a hundredth of an inch higher. And they never mentioned the power of nuclear weapons, where one madman can do damage the likes of which nobody has ever seen before. It's just crazy. It's just crazy to see it. It's crazy to talk about it. But I will stop, and it'll happen very quickly. There will not be a World War III, and we are closer than anybody understands.
Okay, folks. You know, this is, as we have discussed on this program many times over many years, folks, Donald Trump, when he talks about World War III and his worry over it, he's not putting on, he's not playing for his audience. And one of the things that we have used as proof of that was this interview that he gave about 40 years ago with Manhattan Incorporated magazine. This was 40 years ago, where he was talking about the subject, is what he referred to it as, the subject, which was nuclear war, and how nothing else matters but that, because we are so close, as he was saying back then, 40 years ago, to nuclear war. This, as I have postulated on this program, folks, and on the website, is the primary reason, I think, that Trump decided to run back in 2016. He had made noises during four previous election cycles, 98, 2000, 2004, I believe, and 2008, just off the top of my head, it could be wrong about one of those years, but 2016, he jumped into this, particularly in the aftermath of what had happened with regards to Iraq. And yes, folks, he talked about bringing jobs back. Yes, he talked about, you know, making us strong, having a stronger economy, about building a border wall and all the rest of that. But I think at the root of all of it, really, was his fear, his realization that nuclear war was very close. And this is the reason he was driven out of office, folks. Now, again, I'm going to have to do this thing again because, well, folks, because quite frankly, we earned it here. We were warning at the beginning of this entire business when Neocon Incorporated, taking their orders from Benjamin Netanyahu, began their seek and destroy mission against Trump before he had even gotten elected. We posted and gave commentary on thousands of articles appearing in the mainstream Jewish mainstream media, the Israeli press, where you had all of the same characters who were there during the Bush years pushing for war against Iraq, the infamous neocons who were saying, we got to keep Trump out of here. He's wrong. He's the wrong man for the presidency. You know, he's talking about this peace deal with the Palestinians and bringing peace to the Middle East. And folks, unfortunately, it fell on, for the most part, deaf ears. You had this tidal wave of stupidity that gripped huge swaths of people within the quote-unquote anti-Zionist movement, the anti-war movement, the pro-Palestinian movement, whatever we want to call it, who seized upon superficial things, Trump's Jewish son-in-law, Trump's daughter who converted to Judaism, even though you look at her and you can see in a New York second that she she's not a practicing Orthodox Jewess, folks. A practicing Orthodox Jewess looks like a troglodyte. I mean, you know, she's got her head shaved and she wears the big beehive on top of her head. And, you know, I mean, she's something out of a Gentile's nightmare, okay? And rather than people reading between the lines on what Trump was actually saying and what his enemies were saying about him, instead they seized upon every superficial thing in determining that he was just another American president who had been installed in the White House in order to start World War III, okay, which was not the case at all. So yes, folks, I am rubbing it in. I'm saying, yes, we told you so. And I'm saying this, folks, not with any gloating, but with a great deal of regret, because right now, all of us, our entire existence has been reduced to a question mark because of the fact that Trump was pushed out of office. And it was all over this business of his plans to stop this coming World War III, which the followers of Judaism intend to get started, and which really, for all intents and purposes, folks, they have started. Now, in this last thing that he said, he mentioned something very interesting. He said, first of all, you know, if I were president, this attack on Israel would not have taken place. Now, what I'm, again, folks, what we can deduce from this, reading between the lines, is that this attack was not a surprise to anyone. Okay? Our intelligence services, Israel's intelligence services, the Brits, the French, the Germans, they all have people on the ground in Gaza. They're all heavily invested in this situation. They know that if things go in a certain direction, that it can have profound effects for the national security of each of these countries. So they've got their people on the ground. And so Trump saying that, you know, if I had not been run out of office, that this attack would never have taken place. He's basically, because let's face it, folks. Okay, what is he going to do? Is he going to go to Gaza and he's going to be the eyes and ears? No. He gets his information, his intelligence, from the ground up, just as Biden did. Okay, or as Biden's advisors did, but they didn't tell him. I tend to lean in the in direction of the first thing that Biden knew. But nevertheless, what we can infer from what Trump is saying is that this was not a surprise. This happened with the full knowledge of the United States, with the full knowledge of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. You know, interestingly, folks, I saw a news story just before doing the program here where Netanyahu, I guess now, is claiming that his intelligence services knew that the attack was coming and they deliberately didn't tell him in order to harm him politically. Okay. I find that interesting for several reasons. The first of which is, well, let's just go out on a limb here and let's for a moment suspend our usual disbelief in anything that comes out of the mouth of one of the followers of Judaism, because as we say often on the website, folks, it's a rule of nature as incontrovertible as gravity itself, which is that fish swim, birds fly, and Jews lie. Okay, but let's say that in this one case, Netanyahu's telling the truth and that his intelligence services knew that the attack was coming and they allowed it to happen in order to harm him politically so that he would be run out of office. Now, that's a very interesting thing, because what that tells me is that... Sorry, folks, I dropped my pen. I know you can hear it rolling around me trying to get it with my foot. Hold on. What it tells me is that there are people in Israel, if it is true, there are people in Israel who understand that Netanyahu is dangerous and that he has set everything on this course for World War III, and they need to get him out of office before he can push the buttons on the nuclear weapons. Okay. Now, we know that there are these types, these less insane Jews in Israel who feel this way, because as we've discussed on this program, we have the comments that came from Ehud Barak, the former, he's a former prime minister and he's a former chief of staff of the IDF, where he said that this present government is basically the most dangerous government that Israel's ever had, and that it's made up of messianic types who want to get World War III started over the issue of the Temple Mount. Okay, so we know that there are those elements and who understand, look, we can't do this a third time. Okay, this is going to be it. Okay, if we get kicked out of here again, there ain't going to be anything for us to come back to. So I find that very interesting. Okay, but if we go with the conventional wisdom, which is that Netanyahu's lying, what that tells me is that there is enough pushback on the part of the international community, maybe at the highest levels, you know, because Netanyahu had a little tiff going with French President Macron this past weekend. Macron had made a statement about, that he wants the children and the babies in Gaza to the killing to stop, and Netanyahu, told him, how dare you say that, we're not deliberately killing anyone and all the rest of that. So if it is, so what this tells me is that Netanyahu, if he's lying, saying that, he was not told about this, he senses that maybe the Gentiles are coagulating, are gathering together now, organizing together, and that he's getting ready to lose, the support that he has gained in the world ever since October 7th. Anyway, getting back to Trump's comments, where he talked about one madman with a nuclear weapon. We know who he's talking about here, folks. Okay? We know who he's really talking about. He's not worried about the people of Gaza getting a nuclear weapon. I don't think he's that worried about the Iranians getting a nuclear weapon. I think that the one he's most worried about, the madman with the nuclear weapon, is the guy that Trump referred to in that interview with the Israeli journalist Barak Ravid, where he said about him, he said, F Bibi, F him. Okay. Now, if you're Trump, you know, if you're Netanyahu, folks, and you're listening to this speech that Trump just gave, and he said, you know, we will prevent, I will be the president, I promise you, I will be the president that prevents World War III. And if you're Benjamin Netanyahu, and if it is your life's goal to get World War III started, because yes, folks, there are people, there are crazy people who believe that the world as it exists now is a nightmare that needs to be erased, especially the world that has existed ever since the emergence of this man known as Jesus Christ. An insane group of people who have dedicated themselves to destroying everything that has been built in the last 2,000 years. And Netanyahu is one of those types, folks. So if you're Benjamin Netanyahu and you're hearing Trump talking about preventing World War III, what's your job, what's your mission going to be? To speed things along, to turn up the heat, to turn up the violence, and to hurry up and get this thing good and hot so that nobody, not even Donald Trump, can do anything to put this fire out. So like I said, folks, if you tuned in today to get cheered up, I'm sorry to have to disappoint you. I don't have any hopeful words to give here. In fact, I know Trump is smart. I know he has enormous resources at his disposal, including intelligence resources, okay? But I wish he would just go ahead and have this frank discussion with the American people and the world, and to tell them what they need to know. Because we don't have much time. I don't think that we have the amount of time that Trump is assuming that we have. Because I'll put it to you this way, folks. If there is an election a year from now, I would be very, very shocked. Not surprised, shocked. Because as I said, Benjamin Netanyahu, he can't let Trump get back into the White House. And he's only got a year to get this thing moving, to get the Armageddon train moving to the point where it can't be stopped. Okay, now, folks, there's another issue that we're going to cover here on the program. And it deals with the topic that we covered on the last program, which was Netanyahu's statement about killing Amalek, or Amalek, as those horrible rabbis say. Yeah, I'm not going to play the clip again, folks, because I think two times is enough, and you can always go back and listen to it again if you want to. But one of these stinking rabbis that appeared on that collection of sound bites of where they're talking about the destruction of Amalek, you know, the destruction of Esau, which is they ascertained to be the West, the Roman Empire, the Christian countries, okay? This insane rabbi, this stinking rabbi, his name is Yosef Mizrahi, and he's talking, I've got a sound bite that a good close friend of mine sent me, thought that it might be a useful platform for furthering this discussion that we were having last week. And so we're going to listen to this this short little thing here that he has to say.
We'll give you $1 billion extra every year to the aid. Don't touch the churches. We're not allowed to listen to them. God comes before Obama and his friends. You understand? I'm telling you what the laws are. If we are strong enough to do it one day, I doubt it. All place in the world that we will occupy in a war. We go to a war, we occupy. Let's say we occupy Lebanon. and over there there's idol worshipping places, we have the same obligation to destroy it. Why? Because now we live there.
Okay, folks, so again, this is this stinking, insane rabbi, Yosef Mizrahi. He was, like I said, he was part of that collection of sound bites that we played on both of the previous programs, where he's talking about the commandment to destroy Amalek. Okay, so he says something here that all of us really need to take to heart. Okay, now I know there are a lot of people out there who have no affiliation with any kind of a religion. Okay, but what you have to understand, as I said on the last program, folks, is that you have to see the world as these people see us. Those of you who don't have any religion, but you live in the quote-unquote West, in their eyes, you are the descendants of Esau, okay? And you are Amalek, and they have been commanded to destroy you. Now, this rabbi says, all places in the world where we go, we are commanded to destroy the idol worshippers, and Christians are considered idol worshippers because we are unrightly thought to believe in three different gods, which we don't. When we talk about the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, we talk about one God and three persons. Now, I can't give a good theological explanation for this, folks, and quite frankly, I'm not interested in it. I consider it one of these mysteries that that we're never going to understand, and that we really probably shouldn't spend a whole lot of time trying to figure out. We'll figure it out when we get to heaven, and we can sit down over a nice cup of strong coffee with our Creator and say, what's all of this business about with the three persons? Okay. But nevertheless, now he's saying all of this not from Israel. I think he lives up in New York State somewhere, okay, where he says, we are commanded to destroy all idol worshipers wherever we go. Wherever we go. So whether it's the Middle East, or whether it's Monsey, New York, where this stinking rabbi happens to live, they are commanded to engage in ceaseless war against the quote-unquote idol worshipers. Now, the reason that this is important, folks, is because a lot of people fall for this trick where they will seize upon one of the left-leaning Judahites, particularly the ones, you know, who protest Israel's brutality against the Palestinians and all the rest of that, whether it's Code Pink or what are some of the Jewish Voices for Peace, things like that. Okay, so maybe they are protesting, maybe they are making the pretenses of opposing, you know, this brutality that's taking place, but that doesn't mean that they're on our side. Now, a lot of people out there who are easily seduced by some of these individuals who have made their made it their thing that it's all about the Talmud and it doesn't have anything to do with the Old Testament or the Torah. Again, folks, I'm going to go back and I'm going to read this quote that is the basis for this insane rabbi's statement that wherever they go, Jews are commanded to wage their war against the idol worshippers and in particular against Christians. And again, it reads, when the Lord your God brings you into the land you are to possess and drives out the many nations larger and stronger than you, and when the Lord your God has delivered them over to you and you have defeated them, then you must destroy them totally. Make no treaty with them and show them no mercy. Do not save alive anything that breathes. Do not intermarry with them. Do not give your daughters to their sons or take their daughters for your sons. Now here's where it fits in with all of this, folks. Break down their altars, smash their sacred stones, and burn their idols in fire, for you are a holy people unto the Lord your God, who has chosen you out of all the peoples on the face of the earth to be his people, his treasured possession. This does not come from the Talmud, folks. I'm sure that there are things in the Talmud that say the same thing. But the primary ignition, if we want to use that term, for going to war against Christian civilization, all civilization, comes from the Old Testament. The Old Testament is what rejected and had Jesus, had rejected Jesus and had him killed. The Old Testament. Like I said, folks, break down their altars, smash their sacred stones, and burn their idols in the fire. Okay. Now, the reason that I have chosen this this little he's so annoying to listen to, folks. I mean, it's all of them, especially the men. You know, they have got this way of talking where you can just, you can hear them from a mile away, that they have got this speech impediment that absolutely betrays, you know, what's going on upstairs in the attic. The reason that I chose this is because our world is full of examples right now of the whole who, what, where, when, why, and how of why everything is falling apart. Okay. What I just played here, excuse me, things of a similar nature, if I had the time, I could assemble millions of them and put them together and paint a picture that people with a genuine interest in their own future survival should listen to and take to heart. Now, on last week's program, we talked about Netanyahu's statement concerning the destruction of Amalek or Amalek, whatever, and how they are the Hebrew soldiers, the Israelites, whatever you want to call them, they're to go in and they're to slay everything. Men, women, and children, even children who are still nursing from their mothers, to go in and to slay them along with the cattle and the sheep and the oxen and all of the rest of this. Now, folks, when this statement by Netanyahu came out, this was a weapon of mass destruction that had been given to us, the Gentiles, as a gift. Okay? Whatever question marks were out there concerning the apocalyptic energy that drives the Jewish brain, and particularly with regards to what has been going on in the Middle East for the last century, the last piece of the puzzle was put into place for us by none other than Netanyahu himself with his statement. Okay? And it wasn't some kind of hairy, complicated concept involving the Talmud that requires learned experts to come in and unpack it and put it in its proper perspective and all the rest of it. No, folks, it was there in the crystal clearest of language. Okay? This was the thing. It's like we had this gun all this time, but we didn't have the ammo for it. And this ammo was handed to us by none other than Benjamin Netanyahu himself. And yet, folks, yet, that statement, which every peace-loving country in the world should have taken, and they should have made this, you know, just like there's a reason why everybody in the world knows all about the Holocaust, okay? They know all about 6 million. They know all about Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany and the Third Reich. And the reason why is because the Jews, for the last, you know, almost a century, 70 years, they have been hammering this over and over and over again. Hundreds of movies, millions of news stories, just constantly hammering that into the collective head of Gentiledom. And this is why everybody knows about it and why everybody is so afraid of being called a Nazi or being associated with that or whatever. And yet here is this thing that he just said that doesn't require any context. It doesn't require any explanation. He's saying there, in the crystal clearest of language that the Jewish religion commands them to go in and to slay innocent men, women, and children, all the way down to children who are still nursing from their mothers. And what has been done with this, folks? Absolutely nothing. You would think that especially the people in the Middle East that find themselves, you know, having their lives being run through this meat grinder, that this quotation from Netanyahu would be included in every single news story that is coming out involving Israel, involving the war in Gaza, the genocide. And yet, to the best of my knowledge, folks, and I scour the news every morning, 3, 4, 5 hours minimum, going to all of the websites, it was like a match being lit, okay? It burns brightly for a second, and then it goes out. And notice, folks, in Netanyahu's statement, and again, he's not quoting from the Talmud, okay? And this is the reason why anybody out there professing any kind of expertise about why everything is falling apart these days, and they make this lame, harebrained, half-assed explanation that it's all about the Talmud, okay, rather than this very, very easy to understand situation involving the Torah, the Old Testament, whatever. They should be completely ignored, folks. No different than if you went to a doctor and you came in and, you know, you had all of these maladies and the doctor says, well, just go home, take an aspirin and call me next week. These people don't know what they're talking about. They're incompetent. They're not providing you with the information that you need, that we need, in order to wage this war of survival that we are presently fighting. And notice, folks, in this statement, and again, Netanyahu's not taking anything out of context here. This quotation from both the book of Deuteronomy and the book of Samuel, okay, where he says, I'm just going to pull it up here real quick, folks, so that I can get it right. I don't want to miss out on, no, I don't want that one. Where is it? Excuse me, folks. Open. I need the theme from Jeopardy. There we go. Okay, so you must remember what Amalek has done to you, says our Holy Bible in 1 Samuel 15:3. Now go and smite Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have, and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass. Now this is important, folks. The fact that the Bible passage within the same line talks about slaying men, women, children, infants, ox, sheep, camel, and donkeys. And quite simply, folks, the reason why it's all in there, because let's face it, what did the ox and the sheep, excuse me, and the camel and the donkeys do? Okay, it's very simple. And it's called, it's this thing, this psychological phenomenon known as association. Okay, this is how they see us, folks. Okay, the reason that we are included, or that they, meaning these animals, these beasts, are included in the commandment to destroy us is because that's how they see us, that we're all on the same level. This is what, you know, this is when they refer to us as goy or goyim, they're referring to us as cattle. Okay. Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, who was the chief Sephardic rabbi of Israel before he died and went to hell, he gave a sermon, a very famous sermon that made the news very briefly, where he talked about the reason why Gentiles were created, that we were created in human form, but in actuality we're just donkeys, were donkeys that were made by the Creator in order to serve the Jews. Okay. Now, again, folks, the reason that this is so important, as we have said often on this program and on the website, we don't have a Jewish problem. Okay, now I know that's going to baffle a lot of you out there who follow the work that we do. And the, what do you mean we don't have a Jewish problem? That's the only thing you talk about. No, folks, we don't have a Jewish problem. The Jews behave the way that they do because that's the way they are programmed to behave. This is what their religion commands of them to do to us. This is how their religion commands that they see us. Okay? We don't have a Jewish problem. We have a Gentile problem. You see? Because if we allow them to do these things to us, if we allow them to claw their way to the highest peaks of power in the world, and to use these elevated positions in order to make war against us and to destroy us, as they clearly have been doing now for thousands of years, then in the final analysis, we get whatever we deserve. Okay? A sheep that's dumb enough to cuddle up next to a wolf or to a group of them deserves to get his throat ripped out. A mouse who decides he's going to befriend a lion and who winds up in the lion's belly deserves what he got for ignoring what his instincts were telling him. This story involving Netanyahu and this statement that he made, as I said, folks, it should be included in every single news story. You know, the Israelis killed another 500 people today in Gaza. They blew up another hospital. By the way, the reason that they are doing this is because this is what they've been commanded to do according to the book of Deuteronomy and the book of Samuel, recently cited by none other than Israeli Prime Minister himself, Benjamin Netanyahu. And to the best of my knowledge, folks, this is not taking place. They don't want to talk about it. They don't. And I know from personal experience, folks, doing all of the interviews that I've done over the years with Iranian media and other media that's attached or based in certain countries in the Middle East, as soon as you bring up these facts, not interpretations but facts, and you read these things, I'll never forget, I was having a debate with one of those stinking rabbis from Neturi Karta. I think it was during Castlet or one of the massacres. And I quoted right from the book of Deuteronomy that I just read to you twice here. And the moderator was trying to shut me down. No, we don't want to talk about religion. And I said, no, you want to know why this is going on? Don't listen to this slimy, bearded, smelly individual over here. Let me quote to you what his religion tells the followers to do. And they don't want to touch it, even though it's the only thing that is going to take the noose off of our neck, that's going to take the gun away from our head, and it's going to take the knife away from our throat. And they simply won't do it. And this is why I say, folks, we don't have a Jewish problem. We have a Gentile problem. Because the Gentiles don't. They don't want to live to the same with the same intensity and the same dedication that the Jews want us dead. Now, how do we cure something like this? I don't know, folks. I can't even begin to... I don't know. Are they going to figure it out? Yeah, they're going to figure it out after they after Gaza has come, has made its way into their own neighborhoods. Again, folks, like I said at the beginning of the program, I hope you didn't tune in here to get cheered up or, you know, to have your hopes lifted. Because it really is, to a large extent, a hopeless situation. And not because we're weak, because we don't have the power and the resources to save ourselves, but rather because we make the choice not to. When someone makes the choice, I don't want to know this information, I don't want to hear this information, I don't want to damage the relationships I have with my family and with my friends and neighbors, even though I suspect that it's true, I don't want to get near it. How do you overcome something like that, folks? I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. Anyway, folks, a little bit shorter program today than the last two have been. I know at least two people who will be disappointed by that. The rest of you probably will not be. That's okay. As I said, I'm a little under the weather here, and I'm not firing on all cylinders, as the saying goes, and so it's probably best that we bring our discussion to an end. But I will say this, folks, and I point this out often because there are very strong historical implications associated with it, which is, of course, the USS Liberty and the attack on the USS Liberty. Those of you who know the story and who know the events of that day and how close we came to our own demise that day, know that it was nothing short of a miracle that saved the world, because of the grace of God and because of the bravery of the men on board that ship that day. They literally saved the entire planet because they didn't give up the ship. And on that, with using that as our example, folks, we have to move forward with the same thing. Is it hopeless? It sure looks like it. Is there any reason for us to be optimistic about things? Abso-freaking-lutely not. But what else can we do, folks? What else can we do? Well, we got to do it right. We got to do it smart. Don't throw crazy stuff out there. You are a salesman or a saleswoman, and you are trying to convince the jury that your case is right and that of your opponent is wrong. And so we've got to be smart about it. And with that in mind, folks, let's go out until we meet again. Let's do what we can. And above all else, let's lead our lives in the way that our Creator intended us to lead them. Never forget, folks, to pray for a miracle.